But then when you target the supply chain, of course, then you have hundreds or even in some cases, thousands of like suppliers and customers within that supply chain.
The Operations Leadership Podcast with Gautam Basu provides insights for today's business leaders on creating value through operations improvement, process excellence, digital innovation, and organizational leadership.
Hello, and welcome to the Operations Leadership Podcast. Our guest for this episode is Hadi Ganbari. Hadi is an assistant professor at Aalto University's School of Business, and his research covers cybersecurity and, more recently, attacks on supply chains in the digital world. So in this discussion, we're going to talk more about some of the different types of attacks, the attack motivations, purposes, techniques, and scope and impacts of these attacks, as well as real-life cases. Hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hello, Hadi, and welcome to the Operations Leadership Podcast.
Hello, thank you very much for the invitation. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Hadi, so could you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and experience?
Sure. So, my name is Hadi Ganbari. I'm an assistant professor of information systems at Aalto University School of Business. My background is more in software engineering. So by education, I'm an engineer. But then over time, because I used to work in software industry and then in different roles in the IT industry, I started to become maybe more interested in conducting research. And that's how actually I ended up being in academia and then especially focusing on issues around development and use of information systems in different contexts. And of course, as a part of that, I also look at different issues around privacy, cybersecurity, and nowadays more and more cyber attacks. So that's a brief background. Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. You wrote an interesting paper on supply chain attacks in the digital world. And in that paper, you defined cyber attacks as an attack via cyberspace, targeting enterprises' use of cyberspace for the purpose of disrupting, disabling, destroying, or maliciously controlling a computing environment or infrastructure, or destroying the integrity of the data and stealing controlled information. You also state that these types of attacks have some key elements, and you built a nice taxonomy on this. So I was wondering if you could unpack a bit and describe these elements in more detail, leveraging this taxonomy, such as purpose of a cyber attack, motivation, exploited vulnerabilities, attack techniques, target assets, so on and so forth.
Yeah, sure. Before that, I can just tell you that what was the motivation for developing this taxonomy, because I teach some executive education courses on cybersecurity. And usually we talk about different cyber incidents, cyber attacks. And as you know, because I know that you also have some experience with executive education, it's not very useful to use these kind of long reports to pretty much explain what has happened in an attack. So I was looking for something that I can explain a cyber attack, an overall view of an attack in one slide. And that's why, like over a couple of years, I tried to develop this taxonomy. So as you can see, for example, in the taxonomy, we talk about different types of attackers, because when you look at the cyber incidents or cyber attacks, you can see that there are different groups of attackers with different motivations. So, for example, we talk about cyber criminals. As the name implies, pretty much they are interested in monetizing their attacks. They just want to get some sort of financial gain. That's
like ransom, basically.
Yes, exactly. So that's what they are really interested in. Then, of course, nowadays, more and more, we have these state-sponsored hackers, which are usually supported by some hostile nations, hostile countries. So if you don't mind, I name, for example, we have lots of hackers which are backed by Russian government, by the Chinese government, or we have like really good hackers from North Korea. And most of these activities that these groups of hackers, they have some sort of ideological motivation, ideological reason for what they are doing. Then we also, nowadays, we have this kind of concept of hacker for hire. So basically, it means that There are a group of hackers that they are working as freelance, like hackers, experts. Mm-hmm. So if for any reason, if you're looking for someone who has the capabilities to break into someone's, let's say, systems or an organization's infrastructure, you can easily go pretty much in the darknet. You can actually like hire these people, these experts, and then their job is only to conduct these attacks for you. So they don't have any interest personally, for example, in conducting the attacks, but that's their job. That's what they are doing nowadays.
What are the what are the prices typically that these hackers for hire charge? Any idea?
Well, I don't have any like specific like number, but I have heard that, for example, they can easily like break into individuals' accounts with $100, for example.
Wow.
Which is really really low, low if you think about it. Mm-hmm. And then going like, for example, running some sort of ransomware attacks with like a few thousand euros or a few thousand dollars. And then, of course, the most expensive ones are, for example, the ones that if they can, in a way, reveal some sort of zero-day vulnerabilities in specific software or specific modules.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the hacktivists, as the name implies, basically, they are also trying to engage in this kind of like security attacks. Mostly for good purposes. So again, this can be ideological, but then, of course, slightly different from what the state-sponsored attackers they are doing.
Would anonymous constitute like a hacktivist?
Yeah, so I would consider them as hacktivists because they are not after, I don't know, gaining any kind of financial like advantage or... they are more trying to, in a way, I see it as contributing to basically to the society.
Mm-hmm.
They are usually doing it for a good cause.
Okay.
And then if you look at the purpose, so in the purpose we were thinking about, so how we can explain different types of attacks in terms of key information security objectives. So we have these three objectives: confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And then this purpose dimension is actually related to how, for example, different types of attacks can compromise these objectives of information security. So, for example, looking at interception, so pretty much interception attacks, they aim to compromise confidentiality of information. So basically, let's say you have a database containing highly confidential, sensitive information. You don't want any outsider to get access to those. But then through these interception attacks, so pretty much attacks that they want to intercept your data, they just really, they are interested to know what's happening in the database. And then we have like interruption attacks that they are mainly aiming to basically compromise the availability of your services. So they want to interrupt your business operations.
Right.
They want to interrupt, let's say, digital service. Let's say... for example, we are using some sort of a cloud service for our day-to-day activities. And then a group of attackers, they are really interested to interrupt the operations of this cloud service, meaning that then we cannot also do our daily jobs.
Is that like a DOS type?
Yeah, so definitely that's something that can exactly, denial of service attacks, they are specifically like aim to interrupt the operations. And then, of course, we have modifications. Here, the aim is more to like change the state of information. Let's say if you have documents which contain some sort of information and then the attackers want to make unauthorized changes to this document. So pretty much here, the purpose is actually to modify the information, which means that they try to compromise the integrity of the data or the information that you have. And in fabrication... they actually try to, in a way, misuse legitimate information or legitimate channels or features of a system to either conduct some sort of malicious activities or try to gain some advantages. So an interesting, for example, example of this fabrication is the Stuxnet attack. So it was the attack on Iranian nuclear power plants. So pretty much the attackers managed to... change the state of some like the data that the operators they were getting to keep them in dark. But then at the same time, they could use this feature, which was there was a feature which was controlling the speed of centrifuges. So they tried to make them turn faster, spin faster, And then eventually this ended up in a situation that the centrifuges, they were just like exploding. And then the operators, they were not understanding that what's happening. They were thinking that this is just a system failure, but it was actually a fabrication. They just used a simple feature of the system to do something that was malicious. They wanted to cause some sort of a harm to the operators. Yeah.
Got it.
And then, yeah, so motivation, I already like mentioned some of those motivations. They are very closely linked to the attacker. So as I said, criminals, they are often after monetization. But it's also interesting to see that some of these state-sponsored hackers, they are also interested in monetization. For example, the North Korean hackers, because if you know, because of these international sanctions, the North Korean government does not have access, for example, to international financial systems. So there are several cases that actually like points to the evidence that North Korean hackers, they have tried to use ransomware attacks or different types of attacks to actually monetize the attack. So pretty much get either ransoms or get access to some sort of sensitive information, even business sensitive information that, for example, would compromise the IPR of that information. Then they could just turn that to some sort of revenue, if you want to call it. Yeah. And then in terms of vulnerabilities, then we try to think about different groups of vulnerabilities that we have. So vulnerabilities, basically any kind of shortcomings or weaknesses in the whole computing environment or the infrastructure, if you call it. So most of these vulnerabilities are technology related. For example, we have a software error, software bug, or we have a piece of hardware that doesn't function properly. Human vulnerabilities, these are also very common. For example, people don't follow, let's say, information security policy of the organization, or they are not well aware of different types of, for example, attacks or tactics, and then they might fall victim of, for example, phishing attacks, social engineering attacks.
Mm-hmm. And what would constitute, like, for example, if you're at an airport,
yes,
and let's say, you know, you have a hacker that kind of steals information from your mobile,
yeah,
remotely. What does that constitute? Technology or human or a bit of both?
I would think about it more as a combination of both. Because so in that case, if you're in an airport, so I suppose it means that you're connected to, let's say, an open Wi-Fi, meaning that so maybe the Wi-Fi security is not to the level, it's not configured as it is supposed to be. So in that sense, I would categorize that partly as a technology vulnerability. But then at the same time, the issue with human vulnerability is that if you're not aware of these threats in this kind of, for example, using open Wi-Fis in public environment, you might actually just, let's say, connect your work phone to these kind of open Wi-Fis. You start, I don't know, browse your, let's say, email, your inbox, and then meaning that you, in a way, have created this environment that the attackers can also get access to your information.
Got it. So
that's why, for example, it's always like pretty much like recommended that if you're connecting to some open Wi-Fi network, especially in public places, try to use a VPN, when you're using your especially sensitive applications.
Got it.
And then this, yeah, so physical vulnerabilities, I would say they are not very common here in Finland, but in some countries they are still very common. So pretty much, let's say, if you have a broken fence or a broken door, broken lock, but it can also be linked to some sort of like human vulnerability. So we are actually doing some study currently at Aalto University, because as you know here, we have like really tight access control.
Access control, yeah.
So basically, if you want to get to a building, specific rooms, you really need to have access to that.
Hmm.
But we are also trying to see that how this kind of more social dimension of being a good colleague or like, I don't know, cultural aspects might lead to these physical vulnerabilities. For example, let's say you don't know a person, you try to be nice to the person, you keep the door open for them, meaning that a person who doesn't have access to this environment can easily get access to that environment. And then, of course, when they are in, they have access to, let's say, unattended laptops, mobile phones, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So this is actually one area of research that we are doing at the moment to see that. So what are these factors that, in a way, influence people to do this kind of, I would say, they don't comply with the information security policy, but then at the same time, they try to be, let's say, a good colleague or a good person or a good like citizen in a way, if you think
sure.
about it, yes. And then procedural vulnerabilities, they are exactly related to this kind of information security procedures that we have. So I discussed about this access control policy. So imagine that we have an access control policy which is not very well thought or well defined. So eventually it might actually create this kind of holes or these weaknesses that end up to some sort of, or open the door for, let's say, attackers. So in terms of access control policy, let's say, if we have a physical access policy which says everyone who is working in the business school can get access to all the areas with a key. So yes, it's nice. It makes it, I would say, maybe more user-friendly. But then at the same time, in the business school, we have certain areas that only specific people should get access to. So in that sense, we really need to have this kind of more structured access policy, which explains that, for example, if you're a professor, if you're a lecturer, if you're a researcher, or if you're a visitor, you only have access to specific areas based on your role, based on the responsibilities
sure.
that you have. Yes.
Sure. So it almost seems like these, let's say, exploited vulnerabilities, hackers or cyber criminals, what have you, it's almost like can be like a hybrid, like you mentioned about
yes.
technology,
yes.
could be also human and a bit
exactly.
of procedural lack of controls, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. So if you look at the most... Well, I think most of the cyber attacks, they start with some sort of social engineering or, for example, they try to get access to, let's say, open source information. So if you look at this dimension that we talk about attack techniques used basically in these cyber attacks, you can see that they are falling under different categories. For example, social engineering directly targets human element and then, for example, by... let's say, getting access to information which an individual holds or has access to, then you can, of course, get lots of, I would say, new entry points that then you can start pretty much like explore the environment, get access to different parts of the environment, and then most importantly, get access to different types of information, even sensitive information in that environment. Yes.
Got it. Interesting.
And then, yeah, so basically, as I said, so attack techniques used here, they just talk about different types of attacks that we have. And then in this taxonomy, we also try to think about like accommodating both these traditional attacks and supply chain attacks. So that's why we have like different dimensions for attack techniques used on supplier and also attack techniques used on customer. So because then when we are looking at this supply chain attacks, it's good to separate these because it might be that, for example, in a supply chain attack, you use, let's say, some sort of malware infection to get access to specific digital service that the supplier provides. But then when you have that access, you launch another type of attack on the customer because then, for example, the target is different. You're looking for another type of, for example, outcome or the motivation might be different.
Yeah. So this kind of leads to the following question because
yes.
you're distinguishing between, you know, a supply chain attack that's different from a typical cyber attack. So you started to explain it in a way where there's a supply chain, maybe you're one node in the supply chain, like a supplier, but then the attack, whether it's a malware infection or all the different types of attack techniques, that it can spread through the supply chain.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is that kind of the gist of the of your
yeah, kind of. But if I want to just like stick to the definition that we have here, so in a traditional attack, the target is always the organization itself. So let's say if there is a denial of service attack on all the university, the idea is to actually cause damage to all the university. But then when we come to supply chain attacks, there the target is not the organization itself. Usually the target is a customer of the supplier. For example, let's say if for some reason some hostile group is interested to get access to personal information of researchers working in specific research groups at Aalto University. So here, of course, they can cause some sort of damage to Aalto University through the attack, but then their goal is to get access to the information from those individuals within the research groups. So the same applies if you think about more traditional supply chains. So let's say if you are a software provider providing supply chain management systems to many, let's say, customers. Attackers can use, for example, this malware infection. They can compromise the, in a way, integrity of your system, what you're offering to your customers. And then this gives them the entry to the systems of those customers. For example, then they can steal information. They can even, let's say, use some sort of a ransom, launch ransomware attacks on those customers. And then monetize the attack, or in many cases, there might be even like after sensitive information.
Now, does this goes back kind of to the purpose and motivation? Yeah. So, when a whether it's a cyber criminal or a state sponsored hacker, when they target, for example, a supply chain or a specific member in the supply chain, are they motivated by infecting or disrupting the whole supply chain? Do they have that motivation, or does it just kind of propagate through, let's say, the value chain?
So that's actually a very, very good question. I mean, if we think about the definition that we have here, from my perspective, yes. So it should be intentional. So and if I remember correctly, I think I have discussed this before with like in different like places that sometimes there are attacks that accidentally affect the whole supply chain. For example, I still consider the Maersk attack as a accidental supply chain attack. So it was an attack on one. So if you remember, the history behind it is that, so basically this state
this is the Maersk shipping line.
Yes, exactly. Yep. So these state-sponsored hackers, they created some sort of a malware or and then they tried to attack specific operators. If I remember, they were like Ukrainian energy sector. And then the malware actually spread it like over time, and then ended up, for example, being in the company's network. And then through this kind of basically legitimate processes of the company, they started to pretty much infect the systems and then cause damage. So in this case, the spread of the malware was accidental. But if you look at the other cases like SolarWinds, for example, or Kaseya attack, if you look at those, you can see that the attackers had the intention to actually get to the customers. So, for example, in case of SolarWinds, because they knew that the company is providing their kind of information system services to a huge, I would say, group of, I would call them high value targets. So, for example, like state departments, different like big tech companies in the U.S. So they knew that if they would get access to the development and delivery pipeline, then they can actually cause damage to a huge or a large number of companies. But then the motivation was not to like monetize the attack. In this case, it was obvious that they were only after gaining some sort of sensitive information.
Right.
Let's say, I don't know, if you are, for example, in the case of SolarWinds, so if, for example, the Department of Defense is getting, let's say, some sort of a service from the company, then you can start collecting sensitive information about Department of Defense. So pretty much this serves this motivation behind state-sponsored hackers' activities.
And this SolarWinds, this was a platform that was used by U.S. government agencies, yes, yes. but also private companies
exactly,
as well.
Exactly, really like tens of thousands of like customers around the globe, they were using it. But especially in the U.S., lots of government agencies, they were using the digital platform, which was offered by SolarWinds. So I would still like to differentiate between attacks that intentionally interrupt supply chain and supply chain attacks, which differentiate between attacks that accidentally interrupt operations of a supply chain and attacks that intentionally target the whole supply chain.
Yes. And that leads me to my next question is, you know, from an attack standpoint, I mean, why are attackers interested in attacking via supply chain instead of directly attacking a targeted company? So you mentioned, for example, the Maersk case that may have been accidental. Yeah. So what would be the motivation, you know, in their interest in attacking the whole supply chain or one focal company?
I would say that maybe the first motivation is to cause greater damage. Because if you target one company, you're targeting that company's assets. If I would go back to all the universities, so we have a limited number of assets and resources. So then the attack is actually limited to that scope. But then when you target the supply chain, of course, then you have hundreds or even in some cases thousands of suppliers and customers within that supply chain. You know this better in supply chains. We have customers that they are also suppliers themselves. So, for example, let's say they might also provide some sort of services to other customers. Especially in software supply chains, that's sure. very common. So, in this case, you have a greater opportunity to cause greater damage.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, if you think about attack vector or entry points to a system, when you want to target one organization, again, the number of entry points or the attack vectors that you have is way lower than, for example, targeting the whole supply chain. The other part is that in many cases, there might be organizations that they have a very good security posture themselves, but then they are either providing services to customers that they don't have good security posture or receiving services from those customers. If I give you an example, there was this the Target data breach, which was in the U.S. Almost more than 10 years ago.
Right, the retail.
Exactly, you
target.
Know that well. So basically in that case, if you read about that case, you know that Target had, in a way, good security posture. Of course, they had still plenty of vulnerabilities, but they had really good investment in security. And then attackers actually found a company, a supplier that they were offering HVAC basically services to Target. And then through one on-air employee of that company, if I remember the name of the company was Fazio. So basically one person in a small company who was pretty much able to get access to Target's infrastructure was targeted by the attackers. Through that, they got access to Target's infrastructure. Through that, they got access to sensitive information, and then they started to monetize the data. So there are plenty of, opportunities in a larger supply chain compared to, for example, one specific company.
That's pretty wild. Yeah. And maybe, you know, a question related to that is, you know, how do these attackers become aware of the different companies in the supply chain? So for us as supply chain professionals, we typically map the supply chain,
yes, exactly.
right? So who are the kind of partners or the actors within the supply chain, right? So do you think that they actually do a similar thing where they kind of map the actors of the supply chain, say, hey, well, this one is the most vulnerable, we might as well hit them and then disrupt the whole supply chain?
Absolutely, especially the ones that they are well organized. So basically these cyber criminals or state-sponsored hackers, I have actually read reports that shows they have a very well thought organizational chart. They have well thought procedures. So pretty much they are working like an enterprise. So in that sense, they definitely have this kind of procedures or systems in place to actually map the supply chain.
So they're pretty organized.
Yeah, they are. They are okay. Really good organized. If you read, for example, reports about different types of attacks, you can see that who are the people behind these attacks, how they function. It's really interesting. If you get involved in some of these cyber incidents, you realize that in a way they even have this kind of, they don't call it customer support, but they still try to actually, in a way, work with their victims in a way to try to, still provide some sort of or deliver what they promise in a way. So if you think about it, so they have even relations with this kind of victims.
Sure.
But get back to your information about where they can get this information. Of course, one of the techniques that we mentioned in the taxonomy is this open source intelligence. It's very common for companies that to list, for example, the suppliers that they have or list the customers that they have. And of course, this is definitely, I would say, the first step in many of these more structured attacks. You start to collect the open information as much as possible to see that, okay, so what are the situation here? Who are the partners of this company? And then, of course, in many cases, they might actually get access to sensitive information through some sort of social engineering attacks. For example, let's say if they get access to the supply chain manager's system. So, of course, then this gives them more information, reliable information about these more entry points or weak points within the supply chain that they can target next.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And maybe it's changing a little bit gears. You also write in your paper about the impact and the scope of impact. So supply chains, of course, I can imagine that it's monetary economic.
Exactly.
Could you describe some of the other impacts, maybe on a more broad base?
Sure. So, of course, as you said, so economic impact is quite obvious, usually in terms of the damage which is caused to the company or the amount of ransom that you pay. But then, of course, in many cases, these attacks also have reputational damage, especially, I think, in digital supply chains, or I mean, referring to the software supply chains. If you are providing some sort of a software service, software systems, to your customers, and then if attackers get access to that system, meaning that the system was quite vulnerable, of course, then they might actually start looking for alternative solutions. So then pretty much this kind of attack damages your reputation, which then leads to this economic impact. In terms of digital, we were thinking about, what are the damage caused by this kind of attacks in terms of, for example, compromising different types of like systems. For example, it might make some sort of like digital assets or systems unusable, because then you realize that, okay, so the attackers got access to the system. It doesn't make sense to, for example, continue like using this service. In a way, the digital artifact or the digital asset itself becomes completely, pointless to keep it. Then societal impact, this is also very important, especially in those attacks that they in a way involve some sort of, ransom or some sort of data breach. So, for example, in this paper, we talk about Kaseya attack. So Kaseya is a software company. They are offering software to some ISPs or these more information service providers. But then those services are used by more like retail chains or by supermarkets.
So supermarkets.
For example, in terms of Kaseya attack, there are actually stories about like some, villages or small towns in Sweden that because the supermarket chain could not use the system. It was actually made unavailable by the attackers. So then the customers, they could not go there and buy groceries. So
right.
In this case, you can see that the citizens, the end users are directly affected. But there are also more, severe cases. For example, the case of Vastaamo in Finland. So you can see that, of course, that was not a supply chain attack, but then if you think about the consequences of the attack.
Because this was the one that was the hack into the psychologist databases
yes.
and got the customer information.
Exactly. Yeah. So they got access to personal information of over 30,000 patients. And then, you know, when you go to a therapy session, so you talk about, I would say, really lots of things that you don't want everyone
sure.
to know.
Yeah? It's confidential information.
Exactly. So exactly. It's really sensitive. And then in this case, well, you can imagine that how much damage it caused to the, of course, to the society. And that's why, for example, in Finland, the case got lots of attention. And then even nowadays, if even, for example, yesterday I saw a piece of news about it. So this is definitely this societal dimension. And then in terms of physical dimension, in some cases, cyber attacks might actually physically destroy some assets. For instance, again, if we refer to the Stuxnet case, the attack actually caused this kind of damage to physical objects within Iranian nuclear plants. Or if you think about the colonial pipeline, pretty much then it wasn't just about, okay, so compromising some digital systems. So the oil pipeline was actually disrupted. So basically the damage was more physical. Or there are evidence of, for example, some of these state-sponsored hackers targeting critical infrastructures, for example, in Europe or in North America, that let's say if by controlling, let's say, some sort of valves, you can cause physical damage to the environment in which that valve, that oil valve or water valve is operating.
And this is, I think, with that case that you're talking about, that was a hack into their operational technology system, which controlled, as you say, the valves, switchers that basically stopped the flow of natural gas and oil.
Yeah, and then you know that how many, for example, I don't know, thousands of flights were canceled. They were like gas stations that they could not serve the customers. So you can see that especially in these larger attacks, in the ones that they target a supply chain or affect a supply chain, you can see that the impact is actually really huge. And they are, again, a combination of these. So it's not only economic. Usually, they at least several of these basically dimensions are involved in those kinds
exactly.
of
things. And going back to the physical stuff, so you mentioned infrastructure, so logistics infrastructure, you mentioned the flow of energy. I know there's been a lot of, let's say, talk about the U.S. energy grid, for example. So that would constitute kind of a physical dimension.
Yes, and then it's because that's a that's a critical infrastructure, and then of course we have the concept of cyber physical systems, because in as nowadays, for example, these grids are becoming more digitalized or becoming more smart. So pretty much, of course, there are digital elements in it, but at the same time they are very physical. So they are, that's why I think they are critical in many ways. And if I give you another example, a couple of years ago, we had a wave of denial of service attacks on, for example, infrastructures in Finland. And then I remember that one of the like interesting attacks was the one which targeted the capital's transportation system. So basically by causing denial of service attack, because denial of service attack is just... it doesn't have any kind of damage in terms of data or like, let's say, destroying data, getting access to data. They usually make a specific service unavailable. I remember the morning that this was the first time that the app was actually unavailable for use. And it wasn't just like the app. It was also the systems that they were using in different areas. I have a feeling that you could easily see like people are like, a larger group of people like waiting in, let's say, stations, in bus stations, in metro stations. It also, in a way, affected the traffic flow. So this is, again, you can think about it as a, like a more damage or impact on our physical environment and not just in the cyber environment.
Sure, sure. No, it's some scary stuff. I mean, and would you say that the frequency of these attacks are increasing?
Yes, definitely, and especially with the because I referred to these attacks on Finland, especially after the recent geopolitical issues that we have been experiencing, you can see that the numbers are going higher and higher. So basically, we have we are experiencing more and more attacks, and then. Depending on the like the industry, depending on the like the country or the region, we might have of course sometimes less attacks, sometimes more attacks. But in general, the number of attacks are growing, and that the simple reason is that because everything is becoming more digital.
Digital, yeah.
So I think that's the main reason. Yeah.
And also, you know, with the advent of IoT and,
exactly.
and these type of things.
Yes.
You know, maybe those attacks are at the edge.
Yes, definitely. So, and then, well, you referred to IoT, and again, IoTs are like, in a way, crucial elements of the cyber-physical elements, because then you have different types of sensors, you have different types of IoT devices that either control parts of the environment or collect information from parts of the environment. And then, in many cases, of course, you hear lots of stories about how vulnerable are these like devices? So definitely that's a critical factor here.
Sure. So what are some best practices in preventing some of these cyber attacks on supply chains?
Well, of course, I would say that's a very good question, but the answer is also, I would say, very difficult. But personally, I think focusing on this, maybe the human aspect is very important. Of course, I'm biased because I'm an information systems researcher. It might be that I am really interested in this kind of human and social aspects. But then at the same time, I feel like many of these technology vulnerabilities also have some sort of traces of these human vulnerabilities. As I said, I'm an engineer. I know that if software developers, for example, take shortcuts, they might actually develop software which has critical bugs in them, or like this kind of zero-day bugs. So in that sense, I mean, focusing on the human aspect, instead of just trying to think about human is the weakest link, instead of blaming people for not being able to, for example, follow policies, for instance, we try to educate our people and turn these people to our, I would say, strongest link in a way. But then at the same time, if we think about supply chains, the nature of supply chain, the fact that there are plenty of entities are collaborating in a supply chain, definitely I would say the importance of collaboration, closer collaboration, especially in terms of cyber collaboration, is very mm-hmm. important in supply chains.
So information sharing,
exactly,
collaboration,
exactly.
coordination. Yeah.
Exactly. Sharing information is very critical because in many cases, it might be that, for instance, if you're a small company, you have been targeted by attackers. You, I don't know, for obvious reasons, you don't want to get the news leak or get out because you might be worried about your reputation. But then at the same time, by sharing this information with the partners or, for example, with some I would say, like government agencies, public sector, you might actually help other companies to be prepared for these types of attacks or help them not being the victim of the next attack. So definitely information sharing is very important.
Has there been any cases that you know of where, let's say, in a supply chain context, where one company within the supply chain was, let's say, infected with malware and gave advance notice to one of their partners within the supply chain, say, hey, look, we have, we've been corrupted.
Yep.
Watch out. Don't open this email, so on and so forth, to kind of take protective measures.
I don't know any specific case, but if I remember correctly, I read a report from like a couple of years ago that exactly talking about the companies that they are, or supply chains, that they are better in coordinating and information sharing so they can react to attacks faster. But I cannot, unfortunately, I don't know any specific case that, for example, a company has, let's say, given this kind of like notice. But then, of course, there are cases that I know one, at least one European company, one European manufacturing company that was target of a ransomware attack. The company actually, it was really interesting because, of course, they tried to solve the issue. They tried to use it as an opportunity to increase their security posture. They did lots of changes. They did lots of investments. But I also know that the people, the key people who are leading the security operations of this company, they have been actually very transparent about the attack. So sharing information with other companies within their network and also outside. So I have been at least in some of these, for example, let's say meetings or events that, for example, the person is sharing the information really, I would say, transparently sharing this confidential information. So in that case, I can think that definitely the people who are getting this information, hearing about the experience of this company, they also they can benefit from the lessons learned from that case.
Interesting. And of course, yeah, learning from previous cases that have happened. You mentioned the MERS case, the Kaseya cage, the SolarWinds. So what can we learn from those cases to harden the target, so to speak? This has been really fascinating, Hadi. I want to thank you for your time and enlightening us on this very important topic on supply chain attacks in the digital world.
Thank you very much. And it was a pleasure discussing with you. I also enjoyed hearing, of course, more of your perspective because, as we discussed earlier, you know about supply chains way better than what I know. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode of the Operations Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Gautam Basu. If you like what you're listening to with this podcast series, then please hit subscribe. And until next time.